Can I just say something about that last point? Because I disagree very strongly with you on that, on the point, on the view which says that something is scientific because it represents the viewpoint of a particular class. I mean, just an obvious counter example to that is that if it's true that what's scientific is the view of a particular class, that means that you have to reject the whole of developments in physics and mathematics because they were, on the whole, put forward by the people who weren't part of the working class. And there were theories on which, of course, very high levels of technological development has been achieved. And you have to say that you'd have to start building up a proletarian mathematics and a proletarian physics, a proletarian biology and so on. And that would be a very... not only would it be, a very dangerous... It could be a dangerous view, but it would mean it would be a view that would lead you to reject whole series of what really ought to be seen as advances for the working class, but, of course, not theories that were actually put forward by the working class. Can I just say something about your other points, just briefly? Because, you made a whole... You had a long contribution. Yeah. On the thing about prediction, I think it's probably an important point to bring up prediction. But the question then arises, which aspects of Marx's theory do you take to be the aspects on which predictive value is attached? I mean, do you, for instance, does one believe what some of the Popperians would say, that this thesis about the impoverishment of the working class, do you take it to be a possible prediction that one can make that socialism will come about? Can we predict that? Can we say that with certainty that socialism will come about? As we can say, presumably we might argue, that crises are followed by expansion. And it may be that we can predict with a relative degree of certainty on the basis of past experience within capitalism that there's a certain cycle of fluctuations within economics when an expansion is followed by crisis and so on. And we have what people might call good inductive evidence for believing that a crisis will be followed by expansion. But we don't have any inductive evidence of that sort in the case of the prediction that socialism will come about. And there's nothing that's happened in the past on which we can base that kind of a prediction. And so it's obviously crucial that we decide which things are the aspects of Marxism on which predictions can be made and which things are not. And the thing about just one other point about class society, I mean, I think you said that Popper was wrong to say that the theory according to which society is divided into classes is a theory which is untestable because it's just one theory amongst a whole range of alternative possible ones. And I think that's probably true. I mean, you can test whether or not people are divided up into classes by testing their relationship to the means of production. And that's something that's, if you like, fairly factually verifiable. But on the other hand, the general claim that all history is a history of class struggle has quite a different character. And one can't simply verify that in the way in which you can determine whether or not a person is a member of a class and whether or not society, as it is at present constituted, is made up of classes. There are lots of other points. Well, do you want to come back on the proletarian side?
Well,
just the first thing that you say, I don't think that's necessarily disprove my first point, because what I was saying was that the fact that it's true that all of these things are scientific, but then again, Marx pointed out, and the party has always pointed out, that capitalism did produce immense benefits for the working class through its own science by the benefit of the capitalist class. But what you are suggesting would be an impossibility is precisely what socialists are going to have to do within a socialist society. We are going to have a new socialist science, because when you say that science has brought about great benefits for the working class, that is because it's in the nature of capitalism, there have been great benefits to the working class. But also, science has developed itself and apparatus and mechanisms for keeping the working class in poverty, for measuring poverty, for measuring acceptable levels of poverty, for measuring acceptable levels of pain, of suffering that people can go through. And these are the kind of reorganisation of science that will have to take place in a socialist society. So I think, in fact, to just say that there is such a thing as capitalist science and that could be taken over directly for the use of the working class, I think there would have to be tremendous changes made in the way people look at science and the way people look at things like, nuclear energy. The research into which has been largely based not on providing heat or power sources, but on providing weapons and all of the other things. And the fact that that is the practice which all of the research has been aimed at means that it's affected the theory as well. So that the theory would have to be changed. And I'm sure that a lot of natural scientists would agree on that, that the theories of the natural sciences, because they are suited to bring about certain antisocial consequences, are themselves would be useless in a socialist society. And when you say that Marxism, you know, what is predicted in Marxism, that's what we have to look at. Well, I don't disagree on that. You know, I don't think anyone would disagree that there are some things in Marx which may not be of great predictive value. And, you know, dare I say it, there are even things in people other than Marx which are of predictive value. Perhaps some of the things that were said in Russia in the years before the Russian Revolution are of great predictive value. Some of the things which have been said in the last 30 years are of very great social predictive value about socialism. But that doesn't, as I agree, that you have got to select what is useful and what isn't. What I was trying to do is just establish some kind of a criterion of what is scientific. And what I'm saying is that what is scientific, as I understand it, is what is predicted from the point of view of the class that is using that that science. But of course, the consequence of what I've said is that in a socialist society, science would undergo a tremendous revolution, because it would mean this would then be something which would be a questioning process from the point of view of a common interest of every person in society, which would completely transform the nature of science.
Well, I would say that that's just an attitude that society would take. I suppose you would say that it would be a scientific attitude in contrast to an unscientific and subjective one. And, the fact is, of course, that if you look at 19th century capitalism, 19th century capitalism stimulated and at the same time went along with developments in the field of natural sciences, which are verifiable and factual and essential and all the rest of it. But the fact is, of course, that there's an ambivalence. When you talk about class attitudes, as far as the capitalist class are concerned, I mean, there's an ambivalence in relation to what is useful in the field of natural sciences and what is seen to be dangerous as far as their class position is concerned. Now, if you take into consideration the vast strides that were made in biology and with the associated sciences like paleontology, etc., and geology, you find this kind of ambivalence, because on the one hand, the findings of paleontology and geology upset the kind of religious and mystical ideas that are useful to a ruling class, like a capitalist class. But as far as searching for minerals and oil and all that, they were absolutely essential. So that you can't have a geologist of any use to the capitalist class unless he's also a competent paleontologist. He's got to accept the theory, the general theory, and understand the fossilized remains and what they relate to as far as discovering oil or whatever other minerals they are concerned in. Now, you can't have that kind of attitude with a science that's half wrong and half right, as it were. The science is correct as far as the discoveries are concerned, but I mean, if paleontology points to the fact that man has existed for millions of years and that we ascended from lower forms of animals, and this upsets all of the preconceived ideas that are necessary for a class that, whilst they may go some way to accept the materialist conception of history, their conception stops at capitalism, because as far as they're concerned, capitalism is society par excellence. It's come to the development of society has come to an end in capitalism. This is the perfect system. Whatever they may have said about feudalism, agreeing with the materialist conception of history, saying, of course, that Marx was quite right to point out that the feudal lords had to go because they weren't serving any useful social purpose and all the rest of it, and the capitalist class came along, they were revolutionary, and they've created the perfect system. But you see, the fact is, of course, that this is an ambivalence that the ruling class are forced into. Now, in pursuing these sciences and expanding these sciences, which were necessary to trade, necessary to the development of industry, willy-nilly they had to also agree with the other findings. So you see, I think that what you're getting mixed up with is not the difference in the science itself, but what you're getting confused with, in my view, is the attitude that society takes to a particular science. And as far as the natural sciences are concerned, of course, those sciences that deal with anthropology are largely discounted by the capitalist class, but the sciences that natural sciences that are necessary to expand capital and discover minerals and to navigate the ocean and all the rest of it are those sciences that get support. And this is something which we've got to live with and understand and try and argue about, because the one science which comes in for the roughest treatment, of course, is social science in Marxist terms, is the concept of the class struggle, and also, of course, all of the investigations that laid bare the nature of capitalist society, which, of course, the capitalist class don't want to know about. They're always apologising and trying to discount Marx, and most of their discounting is a lot of nonsense. It's all geared towards trying to get people to accept that Marx was wrong and that capitalism is here forever. So this is, I think,
I believe it's so too. It's not just the changing the science, but your attitude to it and its application. For instance, Eastern philosophy was based on fundamentally meditation of the internal man. Well, Western philosophy went into it by a different route, through psychology, Spinoza, and Freud, through psychotherapy. But today, it's been developed into industrial psychology, where you stimulate me to give an act that's useful to him, not to me. And although it started out with the concept of what by Spinoza and Freud of what constitutes a healthy or unhealthy person, today the application has been to use me by stimuli in the interests of some other institution or another person. In other words, its application. The science wouldn't disappear. It didn't even start as a science to do that. It started out to try and formulate what is a healthy person. But through capitalism, it's been diverted into a different form. And now, the whole of psychology is being used to manipulate people. And it's even gone into the advertising business. And in other words, the science wouldn't disappear, but its form would take a different direction.
Mm. Well, maybe this is disagreement about words, though, but I mean, it does involve a completely different questioning process. If you're asking, if you're meditating, say, and asking what will be better for me, what should I go out and do tomorrow morning that would make me feel better? And then if you're saying, what will I do to him tomorrow morning to make him a more profitable commodity for me? They're different questions. And I would say they constitute a completely different scientific approach, both of which would be predictive, but one of which would be predictive from the point of view of a worker, or for that matter, anyone asking a question. And the other one, which could only be asked by the capitalist class. And indeed, I would say that you could extend it and say there would also be something as a sort of working class psychology as well, where you could say, what could people do in order to make, to use their minds for the purpose of changing society? And that these different questioning processes constitute different scientific, different science, different, not just attitudes to science really, but completely different sciences, I think.
The question of how far Marxism ought to take account of developments in other sciences, modern sciences, because one or two people have pointed out the nature that the fact that different scientific theories supersede each other, each one is right in its time. And that extent, it would follow if Marxism is a science, that it should be continually developed. And the point is, to what extent should discoveries made outside of Marxism be used to actually develop the method of Marxism? Mm.
You're rising. That's a very, very interesting point, because I mean, that's what a lot of people would say, that surely it's been a mark of any genuine scientific theory that its acceptance, the period of its acceptance, has been limited. I mean, it hasn't been a theory that's been accepted for all time, if you like, and therefore ought not Marxism, if it's a genuine scientific theory, ought it not? I mean, either to be substantially reformulated, or ought it not to be replaced by some alternative theory about the historical process? But I think there is one difference, and that is that Marxism, or historical materialism, is a theory about history, about the historical process. And I mean, that's a disanalogy with a theory about physics, about any domain within physics, because I mean, you know, it would constitute a different kind of reformulation when you're reformulating a theory which is about the whole historical process. I mean, it may be different as far as its reformulation is concerned, when it actually is concerned with the whole of change in history. And so, I mean, perhaps you can't draw analogies with the theories in, for instance, physics or biology, precisely because of that difference.
Point is, though, any theory has to be developed, doesn't it? Because it really has to be developed insofar as the viewpoint of the theories changes. And what I was thinking of was not so much Marxism being superseded as being continually applied in a new context. Mm. And thus the actual content of it would change.
Do you think, in fact, it is the case that Marxism has developed? Because some people actually do make this criticism of Marxism, don't they? And they say that there's been a tendency, say, for Marxism not to be developed. People kind of have an attachment to it for various political reasons and are much more interested in kind of restating it and kind of proving it to be correct again and again, rather than actually trying to develop it, which presupposes a kind of a critical approach towards it, to kind of examine the areas where perhaps it might be weakest and therefore needs developing or whatever. I don't know, so, I mean, some people have actually kind of tried to argue this, haven't they, that from that point of view of what is a science, and I don't know if it is a correct one, but from that point of view, they said that Marxism doesn't actually conform to a science, because it hasn't been developed very much. I mean, would you agree with that, or do you think that's an incorrect criticism?
Well, I'd say it has been developed insofar as lots of writers have more or less explicitly, lots of thinkers have been influenced by Marxism. For example, the historians who have used them in the theory of Marx. And also people who examine the development of culture, for instance, taking account of the economic factors of sort of to develop Marxism.
I think the other point that you made also sort of raises lots of interesting questions, and that is to what extent, in say developing Marxism, you can draw on subject areas or research outside of Marxism. I don't know if there's sort of points of view on this. And for example, I mean, history is perhaps a bit less problematic in that to what extent you could say do Marxist historians draw on the work of other historians. I don't know, perhaps historians here might like to comment. Could be a problem in other subjects where if you're kind of working a theoretical framework that uses different concepts and has a completely different theoretical structure, then to what extent actually can you draw on, say, bourgeois theories? Or to what extent you have to maintain a complete hostility to the bourgeois theories and actually not try to integrate them with Marxism? Because by doing that, in fact, you make your own... If you take the view that the two are incompatible, in fact, you can't do it without at the same time completely emasculating your theories that you're actually trying to make as Marxist theories.
On the SPGB, yeah.
Sorry, the confusion here first.
Yeah, so once we accept the fact that Marxism shouldn't be loved, I think we should, because it could raise the question of what new interpretation of the developments or whether we're going to accept, do we accept the names on the different one? I'm still in favour of developing Marxism and achieving the status of the in these senses, but we've got that certainly. Because I did raise a serious question about just what kind of new developments you know. There's another point that early on I'll be able to all sciences. Kind of classification of what makes a theory scientific. It's a part of the further interest of a particular class. I'm going to say, so I call that kind of theory, so the materialist conception of history would be scientific as a part of further the interest of the working class. From in fact, my personal experience, I don't think any workers who have been, say, they go. A profound influence, not on the issue of art, on the two conceptualists of the and often it tends to have a kind of an adverse effect, it just mystifies. Particularly when they come across this period of experiment by various left wing groups, it gets into Hegelian dialectics and this kind of stuff, and I would say, well, what the bloody hell is this, I'm a bit unaware of this, this consequence of the theory of science,
Well, the SPGB has developed Marx, and the way they've done it is to say that the only way that socialism can be brought in is by socialists. Not by elite carders, such as the conservative philosophy, Labour, and Leninism. And this is a development of Marx.
Well, that's interesting, because I think some party members would regard that particular aspect of the party's case not so much as a development of Marx, but as a restatement of what Marx himself said. And that in that sense, we are kind of more correct in our interpretation of Marx than perhaps left-wing groups have distorted Marx.
We're not saying what Marx, what he developed. He didn't say that. It's the SPGB who said that, and it's the only one that has said it. And and this is a fundamental change because it goes back right to the base. It needs people to change, people with knowledge. You see, I can understand our friend's point of view. If you just get the beginnings of an idea and then call it a science and it stands still and becomes static, it's no longer a science. But if you look at it, a verification, and then you can bring in something new to attach wealth to it, And the SPTB has done that by saying, and this is our objective, the only way this change, a desirable change that we think will take place, is by socialists who understand and want it. And this is the main difference between the SPTB and the Remainer. This is the basis of our antagonism, isn't it, towards them.
Oh, that's right. I mean, yes, that's absolutely right. Except that a lot of party members actually quote Marx on that and say that, in fact, Marx also argued that a socialist revolution has to be the work of the working class itself, and that we're restating a fundamental Marxist proposition. And that's not actually, I mean, of course, the SPGB has made contributions to Marxist and socialist theory, but that. I'm surprised you mentioned that.
But any change from one society to another needed the mass of the population, didn't it? That's right. This is what the SPG said. But a knowledgeable word in
Time is getting on a bit. Could you just give me indications to sort of how many would like to make a further contribution before we close? Yeah. Is Sob still working?
A lot of us wanted to make one point.
Made lots of points.
Yeah.
What we do, say it now.
Yes.
Well, yes, yes, we're waiting.
I'm very sorry I missed the being late for this beginning of the talk. I don't want you to be angry with me. As I get older, I'm inclined, or more and more disinclined, to quarrel with people over intellectual matters. Before the war in the party, as a member of the party in Sheffield, poet's his name was, in the party 25 years. And then he wrote the ECL letter saying that he had become converted to Buddhism, become a Buddhist. Now that was the first thing to know. Now, I've known some very peculiar changes, but I deal specifically with members of the party. For instance, there was a Conrad Dispitzky, very early member. Used to say to me last year, well, come in from this answer, is this year, why aren't you? I don't agree with the materialist conception of history. I recall there was a party meeting, what's the comment? Jarvis got up there and he made me very angry. He said, the only theory that is really correct, and there were some American comrades there at the time, it was a meeting in the West End, is the theory of final utility. Now that made me very angry because that theory of final utility is simply, put it mildly, it's a kind of polished up, highly polished up rehash of a supply and demand theory, of a very vulgar theory concerning economics. Now, I've had occasion recently to get very angry. I'm glad that, in fact, I've no intention of rejoining the party because it will lead to trouble. I've nothing against the individual in person, but I was down at the Roebuck some time ago. I said, I want you to bear with this. Tell me if you don't, so I'll shut up. And Comrie Whitebrook, what was his name? Warwick. Got up there, there was a coloured person there, a very nice coloured fellow. He said that he was confused because here were people calling themselves Marxists, and there on the other hand there were other people calling themselves Marxists. Now I should have thought that the correct thing for to have done would be to have got up, to have explained to this coloured person just what Marxism is. But along came this individual. I said nothing against him personally, except that he and I, well, we just are in total conflict.
This is relevant to the discussion this afternoon.
I'll explain really why. Godhatton said that those members of the party who know anything, the speaker can correct me if I'm not speaking the truth, no, because she was the speaker at the time. Those members of the party who know nothing at all about Marxism, presumably he was referring to himself, make the best socialists. Now that means this, that, as I've said, although I am very reluctant to indulge in intellectual conflict with individuals, I simply cannot, if I want to cooperate with others in the process of working for socialism, cannot go along with individuals who, at the back of their mind, who have the idea that Marxist teaching is falsehood, is unsound, and that socialism is based upon either some kind of other, of morality or ethics or something like that. The two of us are totally in conflict. Now, I am of the opinion that the Marxist marvelous system of thought, but that it is really very difficult, I will agree, it takes time to understand. Now, Engels himself said, I think it's in Socialism, Utopian, and the Scientific. He says, if I remember rightly, with these two discoveries, the materialist conception of history, the revelation of the source of capitalist profit through surplus value, socialism became a science which had to be worked out. But you want to notice this. Although Engels says that socialism has become a science, he doesn't say that that's the end of it. That socialism isn't more than this. That it has philosophical undertones which transcend the scientific, I hope I'm explaining myself, which transcend the scientific foundation which itself makes socialist ideas. In other words, that quite apart from the materialist conception of history, which is a philosophy of history, quite apart from Marx's economic ideas, the theory of value and surplus value, which elucidate the mechanism of capitalist production, there is a philosophical system of thought which transcends it. And Marx himself arrived at his scientific socialist ideas. How did he arrive at it? He studied at Bonn University, at Berlin University. Arrived at his ideas through a study of German philosophical thought. Now, it hasn't been mentioned here this evening at all, as though it's totally irrelevant. We've had a lot of, I've nothing against our comrade, but a lot of babble there on the board. But there's nothing there relating to the fact that Marx's philosophy of history is the outcome, which is itself is the outcome of a particular philosophical thought, foundation of thought of preceding German philosophers, of Hegel, of Kant, of Feuerbach. There has been no mention of these, without which psychoanalysis could not come into being. Now let us, I'm really mentioning this, for those like Weinberg, as I say, there will be, who think that they can dismiss tremendous philosophical thought of such a character with a snap of the fingers, as I say, John Henry Goldstein, and he are going to come to violent conflict. I'm here in association with the SKGB. I'll leave it at that.
Then again, you did miss the lecture, didn't you?
No, you didn't. No, you can't be heard.
Would you like to just...
I think on the point about Marxism and the context of that particular lecture, I mean, I agree that you were right in what the person actually said, but I think your explanation of why he said what he said is not quite right. I mean, I don't think that his view was that Marxism is false and that therefore people should believe that ethical or utopian socialism is a more viable alternative than Marxism. I think his view was that with the developments in Marxism that have gone not in the 19th century and not with people up until before the First World War, but the developments in Marxism that have taken place relatively recently, since the 60s in Germany and in France and in England, and with the applications of Marxism within so many different fields. I mean, we've already had mention of cultural theory and history, for instance. The developments, the so-called quasi-structuralist developments, the Althusserian developments and so on, one gets so many different definitions, admittedly not from members of the Socialist Party of Great Britain, but one gets so many different definitions of what the essence of Marxism is, that it may be these days, and Marxism in a lot of people's minds has become utterly cut off from any kind of political practice. I mean, in the minds not necessarily of members of the Communist Party associated with Louis Althusser, but in the minds of a lot of people who regard themselves as followers of that man, that it may just be because of these developments in Marxism that Marxism constitutes a hindrance to the developments of socialist ideas. Marxism, not the Marxism of Marx, which is what we mean by Marxism, possibly the Marxism of Engels too, but the Marxism of these people, members of the Communist Party or not, who see themselves as not just as extending Marxist theory, but as developing it, if you like, beyond all recognition, out of all recognition, to the way it was in the 19th century when it was originally put forward. And on the point about, I mean, the things that I didn't mention, you say, you talked about, you gave a quotation from Engels. I mean, Engels also said that Marx stands to the, in the preface to Volume 2 of Capital, that Marx stands to the classical political economist